Welcome to the Diary 101 podcast. I am your host, Aka Kandela Kandepwe, also known as Aka. I know, right? Such an interesting way of introducing myself every single time. Today's guest is somebody special because they wrote a book. Not really. I love authors a lot because I am a reader. And because I'm a reader, I admire those that can write. Maybe I'll write a book one day. But I admire those that can write because as me as a reader, they take me places I would not have been there if I didn't read. So mostly before I actually travel, I read about the place. I read a book about the place. I imagine the place. And to be able to have authors on the podcast is such an interesting thing because today's author writes about kids. She's more than an author, but I love to read. So she writes kids' books, children's books. And can you imagine the imagination of writing a child's book? I even think it's easier to write an adult's book because we're kind of matured through it. I think there's so much you can learn from people that write kids' books. With that being said, she's also into agriculture. So she's writing kids' books. She's also thinking about how agriculture is sustainable, or how we can be fed, or what are the new trends in agriculture. It's something I really just can't wait to just dive into and break down with her. With that being said, today's guest is Rose. Hi, Rose. How are you doing?
Hello. How are you? Thanks for having me here. I'm doing well.
Thanks for being here. Happy to have you. Anytime.
Thank you.
I want to know what inspired you to start writing.
I think the ability to put down my ideas, to articulate my ideas. And it doesn't start like one day you just wake up and write. I just start by scribbling down just what's in your mind. Yeah, the ability just to put down and understand yourself also. I think that's what motivated me, the motivation behind that. Yeah.
But why kids' books? I get why. Yeah, obviously you just don't wake up and write a book. What inspired you to write children's books?
For the kids, I felt like I needed to be of an impact to them. And I thought the best way that I could, it's getting to articulate the issues that they're facing, let's say at a young age, because of the books that I've written for the kids are a bit like a young age. So I felt like, how can I get to articulate these issues that they face? And I felt like the best way to articulate the issues is through storytelling, and how I get to channel these stories and get to relate with what they're going through. Maybe in terms of, like, my first book, it's called I Am Lovable. It's more of identity. And I feel like kids go through a lot of identity issues when they're young. They're just getting to find themselves, finding their voice, finding who they are. And through that, I feel like also they need to also, like, affirmation, like how like getting also to affirm themselves. Yeah. Like just getting to relate with the issues the kids go through and how I get to articulate them through storytelling. Yeah. I think that's the inspiration behind kids' book.
So let's talk a little bit about I Am Lovable. It's such an interesting title, but I also think it's very true, and I agree with what you're saying, because when you're a child, there's so many, when you're an adult, you can see it at different perspectives, right? When you're a child, it's either right or wrong. So if someone says no to you, you think you're not loved. Mm-hmm. And they say yes to you, you think you're loved. But as an adult, they say yes and no. We all know there's in between, there's a backside, there's a gray area, there's everything surrounding it. So we have perspective and children. So what are some of the stories you tell in I Am Lovable?
Okay, Unlovable, it's a book that it's based mostly around affirmations, like such kind of like I'm confident. Like I feel like there's so much power behind words, and while kids get to affirm themselves, this it gives them like an inner confidence. Like they know, like they associate themselves with these positive words, because I believe like words have ability to mold someone, like encourage someone, and also get to break someone. So for I Am Lovable, it's a book that is based around affirmation, like kids getting to say positive words about themselves, even when their action or how they feel is against that. But when they keep on saying these words, it builds something within them. Yeah, so that's the inspiration behind I Am Lovable. It's more of affirmation, like the power of words in our day-to-day lives for the kids.
I like that. I love that because I have my daily affirmations on my phone and they keep me sane. So when you think about I Am Lovable as affirmation, why did you write The Dreamer?
Okay, for The Dreamer, it's more of ambition, like awakening the spirit of ambition in young kids, because I believe kids should be ambitious, like, and they are ambitious. Like most of the kids, they will be like, when I grow up, I want to be this and this, I want to be this and this. I think it's a norm for the young kids, even in school, they ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? And The Dreamer, it's a book that awakens the spirit of ambition in such a way. Also, it goes against the norms. There's this specific career that they're supposed to be for the girls, and this career should be for the boys. But The Dreamer, it changes the norms around that. Like, it's okay for a girl to be an astronaut, it's okay for a boy to be a chef. You see, there's also that shift in career wise. As long as they know they have the ability to dream and execute their dreams, they should also not be like limited to what society, like expectations, like the norms of the society as a lady or as a boy, like despite of the genders. Yeah,
I totally agree with you. And have you ever had a talk at a school or just in a community where the kids are giving you feedback about the book, the books and the type of impact they've had?
Yeah, I've had that. Most of the times, whenever I get to release a book, I do like a community outreach, maybe in my local church, maybe in a local gathering, something around that. And by that, I get to interact with the kids. And these books are like most of the feedbacks that I get, also from the parents. Most of them, they tell me, like, I got a recent feedback actually from a parent who had bought a book, I Am Lovable. And she was like, her kid had an issue at school. Like, she was going through a lot of bullying. And when she got to read the book and she got to relate to the book from what she was going through, and she kept repeating this. Words and those words like built a certain confidence in them, and I feel like, yeah, in fact, the I'm Lovable has much impact. Not only does it have impact, but it's so much practical in their day-to-day life for the kids, and also The Dreamer, it has the same impact.
Yeah, I love both of them, and I see the relation, right? I Am Lovable is kind of a book that you want your child reading so that they can affirm themselves and be confident and know they are loved. Yeah. And The Dreamer is a book that helps a child imagine life beyond where they are right now, and validate that their dreams are valid. You can be a pilot, you can be an astronaut, you can be a doctor, you can be whatever you want to become. The interesting thing, like, I see the relation in these two. I'm more curious to know, why did you write Aliens of Our Era?
Okay, Aliens of Our Era actually was my first book back in campus. Yeah, it was my first book that I wrote before the kids' book. Yeah, so I wrote it back in campus. Back then, I wanted to address an issue about social diversity, because the book tackles around those areas. I feel like social diversity is an issue that happens in our day-to-day life. There's a lot of division in the society, not only concerning the race, also social classes. And I feel like that was an issue to address. Like, it's a common basic issue. And through that book, I featured a story of a Caucasian girl living in an African country. Like, how is the way of life? I wanted to revamp, like, how Africans get to live in Western countries. Like, how does it look like for a Caucasian girl living in an African country and the way of life? And bring that perspective, like, the social diversity around that, like, what she experiences and what will be different for an African living in a Western country. Like, I wanted to bring that perspective. How would it look like? And the social diversity within our continent as Africa. Yeah, so I thought that was the best way to channel the aspect of social diversity through the novel, A Lens of Our Era. I don't know if that's I've answered John.
You have. And it's conversations we never have, right? Sometimes we think that we talk about how it feels for an African to live in the Western side of the world, right? But we never have conversations about how does it feel for an African to live in a different African country, but with different social norms, or how does it feel for a Westerner to come to an African country. So yeah, it's such an interesting book, to be honest, because we all need to look at it at a different lens to really understand what social diversity is. And mostly, again, we always just try to relate it to ourselves. What did you learn about yourself after writing the books, or during or after?
Okay, the ability to create, because I feel like the moment when you start a book, you have these ideas, you want to put down this and this, but I feel like the moment you continue writing, new ideas come through your mind. And I feel like writing and creativity, it's a two-way thing. Like, not a two-way, but it's just a one-way thing. Like, it requires creativity for you to right, and like that, the magic and creation, it's something that just comes from nowhere. And you look back on what you have done, and you're like, wow, like, it's just a mystery. You can't unveil it, it just flows.
That's so true. And how did your life change after writing three books?
I think writing is a journey. It's a journey. When it comes to creativity, understanding, articulating of yourself, I feel it's a journey. Day by day, you get better. Like, you release the first book and you're like, next time I need to correct on this and this. I think it's a journey. It's more of a journey of a growth. Getting to realize what you need to address, taking the feedback from people. I feel, for me, it's more of a journey of growth. I haven't arrived where I want to be. I feel I'm still in that journey of getting better day by day, day by day. Yeah.
No, I get it. I think the goal in life is you're never supposed to reach your full potential. If you ever reach your full potential, it also means you stop learning. So always something new you can improve on. There's always something you can learn. There's always something new you can do. In terms of growth, I mean, how has your environment changed and your perspective? And how have you gotten opportunities from you being an author compared to when you were not?
Being an author, it brings like the evidence of the work that you've done, and you tell someone, I've done this and this, and they can see what you've done. And let's say most of these events you get to attend, and you tell people you are doing this work concerning advocating for this and this, because most of the times I use my book as a tool of advocacy. Maybe I'm addressing this issue of social diversity, and it's an area that many organizations, like, they work around that, maybe in terms of gender advocacy, in terms of education, equality, and they look for for platforms whereby they can engage advocates, influencers, like to push their agenda. And being a writer, it has put me in that position whereby I can get to work with also the organization that they are much on advocacy. Like I can amplify the advocacy through my writing, like using storytelling as a tool for advocacy. Yeah,
that makes a lot of sense. And I like it. I genuinely just love it. It's, yeah, you look at it differently and it opens different doors. And there are always people ready to support an endeavor because all of us have different things we'd like to support. I want to go back to your childhood. What's your favorite childhood memory that you think might have inspired the author in you to start writing? I doubt.
Childhood memory. I feel like for me, writing, it didn't start like when I was young. I started writing 2019, so it's something that I've cultivated within me. For my childhood memory, I don't think I have a memory that is attached to writing, because I feel like for my writing, it has been much of an adventure of discovering and nurturing my ability. That's what I can say. For my childhood memory, I really like the Christmas periods whereby we get to spend time with family. I think those are the memories that I get to treasure as a child back the days.
Me too. What type of food? So our traditional food was rice and chicken and Fanta.
Wow.
And I miss that so much because it's not the food. It's like you said, my cousins were coming. Everybody was going to be at my grandparents' house. We're all going to cook together. We're all going to eat together. We're all going to make the dishes together. We're all going to play games together, have a sleepover. So, yeah, that's my favorite. Meal-wise and family-wise, how is Christmas for you?
Okay, for me, Christmas as a child, back the days, it was more food and going to the beach. For the food, it was party and also the meat, chicken, like beef, all that. But I really appreciate the moments at the beach with family, extended family. Yeah, those are the memories that I get to treasure as a child.
I like that. Me too, honestly. I am big on family. I enjoy spending time with my family and appreciate it more now that I'm an adult, because as a kid I was kind of forced to be in those situations. Now I have to put myself in situations that I can be around my family more. So yeah, I get it.
I feel like the moment we are growing up, we get to be engaged maybe in different places, and the bond is not like when we were young because everyone is engaged. Yeah.
No, I agree. And I think you're taking me back. My favorite memory too was my grandfather liked taking road trips. So we'd take road trips in different areas on a Saturday or a Sunday. We'd go to church together, or take a road trip to see a relative, or take a road trip just to see the river, play in the water, buy some fish, buy some rice. And now I look back and I really did have like a full-blown childhood experience with a lot of activities.
I can imagine.
So when we've talked about your childhood memory, what inspired you to become an agricultural economist?
I think I wanted something more practical, and I find agriculture to be more practical. While I joined campus, that was around 2017 at the University of Nairobi. My first course was mathematics, but that's what I was called to do. But I never loved it, so I had to change it after my first year. And I went and did agricultural economics. That was another department of agriculture and veterinary sciences. Yeah, so I feel like that was a bold decision also after spending 1 year at the School of Mathematics. And I feel like it was also a good decision that I made for myself. because it has been something more practical, something more engaging, and something that I love doing. Yes. Yeah.
So you're currently working in this role, right?
Yeah, I'm in the agricultural field too.
So one of the things I love about the agriculture field is it's actually growing at the fast rate in Africa now. We're all talking about agriculture and climate change, the impact of climate change. What are some of the trends you're seeing in agriculture now?
I feel like the current change in agriculture, from my recent engagement, it's getting the youth in more of these spaces, like bringing the youth into agriculture. And I feel like there's a lot of change that needs to take place to lure this youth into this on the youth. From my field of expertise and work, and I feel like we should involve more of the youth around that, under the climate change also, and just agriculture in general and policy advocacy in agriculture. Yeah,
that's interesting. So the change is seeing more youths join in, and
yeah.
I do not know how Kenya is, right? But for Zambia, we have we have more people getting into agriculture now. But when you if I say I want to be an agriculture economics, the first thing they'll say is you want to become a farmer. You don't want to become a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. You just want to become a farmer for the rest of your life. There's no money in farming. Why do you want to become a farmer? It's like a whole trend where it just trickles down to everything. I do think now it's better because everybody's seeing the importance of agriculture and its impact on food security in our countries. What are some of the things you were told when you decided to move from mathematics to the agriculture side?
It's more when you say agriculture, people think like you're not going to the white collar job. For you, you're going to study and then end up to be a farmer at the farm. Like people, they don't know, like there's opportunities around the agriculture field, and the rate of unemployment is very hard. The solution to that, because I think the agricultural value chains, they offer a lot of opportunities for the youth. In fact, despite the area that you've studied, I feel like a lot of opportunities that people could invest in acquiring knowledge in agriculture and skills, they can make like the country much better in terms of the GDP, in terms of that. Because a lot of employment lies in agricultural value chains.
I also think so. I think there's actually a lot of money when you get into that field. I just also think that somehow was too colonized, because most of the people that own the biggest or who are bigger players in the agriculture value chain Westerners, right? So it's how do we move from just being participants or labor to actually being part of the people that own some sort of the agriculture value chain?
True. And I feel like right now, Africa, we should focus more on independency and sustainability of those systems. Like, how can we sustain ourselves with the current change of the USAID, whereby there's short of fundings? Like, I feel like Africa, we should also get to shift to sustainability in agriculture.
Yes, true. What do you think would be some of the impacts of USAID being withdrawn in Kenya or around the world, to be honest, or Africa, around Africa?
I think like almost 80% of the African countries are affected, with mostly the health sector, because most of the USAID funding is more on the health. Also, community development, a big percentage are affected with that. Also, concerning the HIV/AIDS patients, the ARVs, I think it is a big blow to the health sector for them. It's the big sector that is affected mostly.
Do you know that USAID funds most of the youth engagement activities in Africa? They have there's also like Yali Regional Center, where you have, there's one in South Africa, there's one in Kenya, there's also one in Ghana. I think the one in Kenya is also supported by the Trevor Noah Foundation, but with USAID. And I was having a conversation with, I think one of my cousins, or my, elder, yeah, one of my cousins. And I said, the way things are going to be set apart now is, I'm a beneficiary of USAID and US money on fellowships and everything, right? And that has set me apart and that has pushed my growth. So now, the other people, the generation coming down, they now have to now find a strategy of what's going to set them apart. Because what if the US-sponsored summits and activities are withdrawn? That's like a step back for them, because that was helping us grow at a fast rate somehow. So I don't know if you've experienced this or seen it in any of your communities.
Okay, on my side, I've not interacted much with the USAID, like in terms of their funding fellowships or projects, but I feel like it still has an impact.
Yeah, that's so true. So how did you get into beekeeping and agroforestry?
Okay, my beekeeping journey started back in my third year in campus, whereby I was attached. I did an attachment at a beekeeping, it's a beekeeping institute, whereby I got to learn more on the process of beekeeping, the value chains around beekeeping. And that's where my journey started with beekeeping as a commercial entity, and also for something that I just can do as an adventure. And from that, I was encouraged like to venture into the field of beekeeping, and I started with two hives that since then, and I'm looking forward to see how they perform, and so that I can expand and make it more of maybe a business, because there's a lot of opportunities around beekeeping. And with my knowledge around that, I feel like it can be something that also later on I can be maybe of community impact in terms of sharing my knowledge around that. Right now I've started with two hives, and I want to see how they perform so that I can increase.
That's interesting. I love how you have such a calm persona, and your willingness to start something new, or just to start afresh from anything, is something I really admire. From writing a book to switching majors from mathematics to agriculture, and also just trying beekeeping to see if it would have any impact on you and then on your community and start a business, is something I really, really admire. If you'd have anyone you admire in the world, any woman, who would it be?
I think the first lady, Michelle Obama, the former first lady. I think I really admire her a lot.
Why Michelle Obama?
I admire her from how she transitioned from her being a first lady to how currently she's much of an impact to the global platform when it comes to advocating for the girl child education with the organization that she has started, the Girls Alliance. Yeah, so she really inspires me a lot. Like age is not a limit. Despite which field are you in today, you can use much of your lifetime experience maybe and start something else. Like there's no limit to creating impact in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, I also love how the former First Lady, Michelle Obama, has transitioned, right? I kind of feel like, you know how you switch roles in a marriage? Not switch roles, but how everybody has to take a turn when it comes to success. So the last 8 years in the White House seemed to be about President Barack Obama. And now the rest of when they came out of power, it seems to be about Michelle Obama. The books she's writing, the talks, I feel like she's also very honest about some of the things that transpired and what cultural diversity does to people and where it is. So yeah, I like that too. She's amazing. I plan to read her books soon. I haven't yet reached to a point of reading her books, but I've heard her on podcasts and listened to some of her work on video, and I'm really just inspired.
Yeah, she inspires me a lot.
Do you have any other lady that inspires you?
I love Chimamanda.
Yes!
As a writer, I love her writing work and how she puts herself out there.
I love her too. I love and admire her work. So one thing about me is when it comes to people's work, I first want to familiarize myself. So I love Chimamanda's TED Talk, articles, videos. I still haven't read her book, which is bad because I read a lot. But I love her work so much and I admire it, and just her courage to speak her mind and be the person she wants to become. I think it's something we all need to just start speaking the truth, because I think she says it as it is, not as we think it should be. So yeah, I really love her as well. And I'm also trying to dive into African authors this year, to read more African authors. And I really can't wait to start reading hers.
For me, I've always loved African books. Yeah, I would recommend.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my friends, her name is Nuria. She's Kenyan. We are going on a journey of reading African books. So she was here. We both got the same book and we're reading it. And it's Homecoming. Yeah, it's a book called Homecoming. And I love it so much. And I'm really taking my time reading it, which is rare, but yeah, I love to dive into reading and getting to just letting it sink in for a while. Do you think you're going to be writing a book anytime soon?
Okay, for now I have a new book. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called From the Mara. Right now I'm just campaigning for the book and then I can see what's next. But I would love to venture into poetry. Yeah.
Yes, please. I think that poetry died with COVID.
Really?
And it's so sad. Yes. I say it died with COVID because in Lusaka, we always had places that had poetry every weekend. And when we were in lockdown, a lot of people were not meeting up, so we're not listening to that poetry. I'm so sad that they didn't get to the internet like everybody else did to share their work. So now I'm still trying to find a poetry community, because poetry is what we all need. We all need it. And it's sad that I can't find a poetry community to rejoin. But yeah, please join poetry. So what's your new book about, From the Mara?
Okay, From the Mirror is a book that advocates for the girls and women are in marginalized places. That is Kenya and Africa at large. And it just outlines their struggles around cultural diversity and humanitarian crisis. And yeah, what it looks like for them, them being in a quest for education as a necessity, but not an option. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes. Yeah, we need those books more. I always say that for us to start worrying about the impact of technology, we need to first hand down the foundation of everything, which is the education system, the healthcare system. We need all those to be solidified. Then we can start talking about, even the food security. Like, then we can start talking about, oh, what's the impact of technology? Because how do we move from technology when we still don't have schools, we still don't have, food security is still uncertain in most areas. Mm-hmm. Yes, and the healthcare, very pathetic. So how do we move from that? So I feel like maybe that's why the Western countries have grown so much. It's because they did get their fundamentals right. Like, they have issues, but they're there and they seem to be working for them somehow. For us, it was still figuring out, like you said, there's no sustainability in healthcare because most of the things are aid given. And education is also a myth in some rural areas around Africa. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And food security is something we talk about every year. And we look at the rain patterns and it's just a whole thing. So, yeah, I really can't wait to read that one. And for the children's book, I think I'd like to read it to my sister, to be honest.
Yeah. I'd love if you get to read it.
I will. Please. I can order it on Amazon, right?
Yeah, in a few times, like maybe in next month, in a few months to come.
Yay! I know I'm ordering that on Amazon. With that being said, Rose, I'd like to give you an opportunity to ask me a question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My question is, what do you envision for TOS in the next 5 years to come? Considering this is a very platform. In terms of how you get to channel, how you get to put information out there, how you get to share knowledge, how you get to put voices out there. This is a very good platform which has a future. So what do you envision for it in the next 5 years to start?
Good question. So Tonse is the mother company and the podcast is under Tonse, right? In the future, how I envision Tonse is it being a data-driven, we want to create a data-driven ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. That will help individuals and businesses thrive. In terms of, I think and believe that if individuals take the initiative to invest in themselves, far from the formal education. So mostly we are taught to say, just go to school and it's good enough. But when you come into the real world, the people that are more competitive are the ones that had the initiative of investing in themselves. And those are the people that organizations are looking for. And for an organization, there are so many organizations that are investing in young people programs. But I think that there's a misalignment because we're bringing programs that work in the Western world and you try to make them work in Africa or even other sides of the world that are not developed. Like some programs, a program that worked in the US can't work in Kenya the same way, right? It has to be tweaked. The target audience, there's so many factors you have to put in place. So with Tonse, we're trying to create a reference point with data so that if you're an individual, you can know what are the actual trends in the market. If you're an organization, you can also know what the actual trends are and how you can tweak some of your programs, especially mentorship programs. and coaching and personal development programs that organizations offer to young people in Africa. So yes, it's going to be a data referencing ecosystem that we're creating currently, and I literally love it. It's in place. A lot of things are making sense now than they made sense then. And how the Diary 101 podcast is contributing to this vision is collecting stories. So me talking to different people around the world just to show the similar things we might be going through and the different things we might be going through, and giving the audience a chance to actually take what they can take and implement them wherever they are. I feel like sometimes we're always focusing so much on the differences, how this country is very different from that country. But if we really just pay attention, you'd find that all these countries are the same. We all go through the same thing, but at different capacities. And me just being able to talk to different people around the world and just amplifying that is the whole role of Tonse. The whole role of the Diary 101 podcast contributing to the vision of Tonse. So yes, in 5 years, I think it's going to be an interesting thing to look at. There's so many transitioning things happening, but yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing to look at and to explore, but I do see it growing so much. Tonse is a global company, I believe so, and the Diary 101 would be like one of the leading podcasts in Africa and the world when it comes to business and career development. So yeah, I really can't wait.
Wow, that's great. Wishing you all the best in the journey.
Thank you so much. I would like to know what you're looking forward to.
Like in life, in general?
Yeah, in general.
Okay. For me, I look forward to live out my full potential. What is me, and just doing more with what is placed within me, you know. So most of the times I feel like we look for a lot of things outside, but what do you have at hand? So I feel like I wanna utilize my full potential with what I have. Yeah.
I like that. We've come to the end. Thank you so much for being part of this community and sharing yourself with the world. I have learned so much, and I'm really grateful for what you do, and really grateful for the books. I think we need a lot of people in Africa writing more, creating more podcasts, creating content that is relevant to us, because then we can understand ourselves better. So yeah, really, Rose, thank you so much. I really hope you had fun and you enjoyed
being part of it. Thank you for having me. Loved it.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, I hope you learned something new and loved the experience we just gave you. So check out Rose's work. Check out her books. Her books will be on Amazon soon, so check up on that announcement. With that being said, that is bye for now. Bye.